leaving no one behind.
This online talk series is titled Leaving No One Behind, and it is brought to you by the House of African Feminisms, which is a Goethe Institute project in Southern Africa. In this series of talk, we seek to explore intersectionality in African feminism. To all of you joining us from many, many places in Africa and in the rest of the world, thank you to all of you being here. And thank you especially to Tolu, with whom I am engaging a friendship. We've only known each other since July. And we talked a lot about this concept of strong womanhood, which was very interesting because I was working on the concept of strong womanhood. And one day Tolu brought me a journal and she was like, look, I've been writing about these things. It is a privilege actually to be in conversation with you. I hope I do justice to locating strong women. Wonderful. And it's actually become now my go-to book. You know, there are some books that when people are talking about certain subjects, you are like, read this. So when, you know, we are talking about like strong woman, who is a strong woman, how does she become a strong woman, and all the things that we use, I'm like, read this book. When you finish, we talk. So the strong woman is in one word. Was that also like a deliberate thing? Where did that come from?
Definitely, because I'm thinking, so Superman is one word, right? Mm-hmm. This mythical beings. And for me, strong woman is a myth, is a trope. It's a myth that we tell ourselves. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I should correct that. It's a myth that we're told and that sometimes we become or try to become. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes the thing we're trying to become is something that we probably shouldn't be trying to become, because it's a myth that holds in it a lot of you have to endure. And there are things in life that need to be endured, but there's also a lot that doesn't need to be. Mm-hmm. And specifically as Black women, we already know all the places and ways through history that Black women have been made to carry what they shouldn't need to carry, because supposedly we don't feel pain, or we don't feel it like other people, or we're made to carry these burdens. And I'm like, no, you're human like everybody else is human. So putting it together for me was to highlight the point that it's unattainable in many ways.
So we're talking about this, you know, mythical person who doesn't really exist. One thing I was struck about was, you know, the vulnerability, because sometimes, although it has been, you know, others tell us to be these strong women or to be the strong woman, but sometimes we tell ourselves, so we present the, you know, the thoughts that we are these inspirational being, these women, you know, breaking the glass ceiling, doing everything. But what I was really struck by the vulnerability that seeps, you know, in this book. And Vangile, actually, who wrote the blurb for this, wrote, to be woman is to be silent or silenced. What, you know, thoughts?
I agree in the sense that not the fact that you want to be silent or silenced, but that there is a certain conditioning where you're supposed to, for different reasons. The silence is linked to how elegant you appear. You know, it adds to the airhead thing, if that's where you're going. Or if you're too combative. And by combative, I don't necessarily mean that you're argumentative. I just mean that you have a strong voice. So in all of these ways, it's either you decide you're going to go and you don't care that those things are being said about you, or you're going to choose a way to conform, and that conforming is its own silence.
This is the kind of poetry I like to read, because I like to see myself, you know, in the writing that I come across with. But in this last stanza of faking death to avoid sex is not extreme, there is this also breaking ourselves to pieces. So it says, I may lose a limb in a fall, but if he ceases pursuit, do I not win? Is this not how we practice being strong, breaking ourselves in pieces so we can choose the one fragment that stays whole? And I would like you to read a poem. Frankly, I'm running out of ways to fight for you, and then we can talk.
Frankly, I'm running out of ways to fight for you. If it wasn't him, it was someone like him. Promising luxury, spending your money for sport. He was no match for you. I affirmed your worth. Try it. You preferred to dote on his blunders. As if you knew the love he promised was so unsteady, any critique was a threat to your dream of belonging. Is that why you couldn't leave? He held your heart with barbed wire, made you believe his barbs were a necessary test to prove you were worthy of him. He shuttled women to your bed, brandished their youth like a threat he knew would ignite your insecurities. Everyone but you could spot his lies easy. Only tarred section of a potholed highway. Love, he said, squeezing your face between his hands, and you tried to forget stupid, weak, the names he gave you. Aren't you tired? I held your trembling body in a park where once green leaves compliantly fell from their branches, a cycle of survival. Love yourself enough to walk away, I said, to survive him. But performing contentment to spite the other woman was sport. Winnable, your whole self summoned as a formidable threat. If only you had the same audacity not to shrink for him, threaten his foothold. There were ways. I unpacked them. Tried. A stack of compliments was all it took to deter you. One skewed spot to obscure your view. I refined your angle of sight. Wanted to believe it was enough to dismantle the persona you clung to, which wasn't him. But you concocted lies to feign blindness to the reasons you shouldn't love him. As if he wasn't a bed of nails your love laid on, Keenan. When his hurt stabbed your bones, I treated each wound until we broke your resolve to endure him. Crave eternal permission to acknowledge your own voice. I tried to revive your season of this is who I am, take it or leave it. And didn't we reminisce on days when you spot red hair, blue lips, and a bald head, daring men to spot the difference between their fantasies and the real you. When I tried to make you blend, it was you who said they had to learn to love only the you they met or leave. Those days when you believed you deserved more, when the thought of lonely was not a threat that made you surrender sense to the nearest Oglean man, him. When you demanded your card and keys at the spot where you met him. I need to learn to love me, you said, a dormant threat till then. I believed for you. Why abrade the scar before it heals? Cleave yet again to him. I tried.
How do we move from, I need to learn to love me, take it or leave it, to this? And this is where I was talking about the silence, when, you know, when you keep silent, when words can no longer do.
I mean, it's on the one hand, when I started writing it, I thought it was about friends who choose the wrong men, who you're constantly having to comfort. And as I was challenged through the editing process by one of my mentors in particular, I came to understand that maybe it was about that on the surface, but it's also about the hurt of being in a position where, I guess, even in the friendship, the fact that the friend keeps choosing to go into this thing means you're only, you're only of worth when you're cleaning up the mess. So it was also about that betrayal in a friendship. But it's that whole thing of even in speaking about breaking up, what was it the first poem said? You choose which part stays whole. So you break, you allow all the other pieces to break so that you can choose one part. Similarly, in this, you have the part where she's cracking, but instead of to agree that with herself that she's cracking, she's like, but I can win the battle against that woman and that woman. And so that is where she enjoys, quote unquote, enjoy in the moment without the thinking, at least I can get some joy from this. Whereas that's a minuscule joy, which is going to pass very quickly. And then she will return to her sadness because she's not actually embracing herself. So this whole poem was, yeah, at some point I'm going to need to learn to love you from afar. And I will love you, but I will keep the door open for you to be able to come in when you want to, because that's friendship. But perhaps sometimes I'm going to save me from this, because we also underestimate like what some of those interactions do to us. Because if you're carrying all the time, it's not just that you carry and it doesn't affect you, like it has an effect.
It
And
does.
thankfully for me, it's just an emotional effect. But there was a discourse on Twitter a few weeks ago where, you know, there are people who are friends with people in, for example, in really abusive relationships who, as the friend, you have ended up dead. Friends have ended up dead because the husband or the partner has come to your house because you shielded them at a point where, you know, they needed somebody to be shielded from the person's violence, and people have ended up dead. And so, like, these conversations are a little bit difficult. You can't just say you're always there, you're always there. At some point,
No.
you choose yourself and you choose other ways to be there.
Yeah, it's
Yeah,
a bit
not
like,
to be.
in theory, when we speak of, sisterhood and or the sorority, how does it look like in practice, when you are doing sisterhood, as opposed to just talking about and giving yourself that time to kind of say, I will love you from afar. The door is open, but my
Yeah, so that
heart.
you, yeah, so that you care and you try to protect, but at some point you let people need to make their own decisions and you hold them the best that you can, but you also need to realize you're not God. You can't, you know. You don't
Exactly.
eat. The other thing is a God complex where you think you can save people and none of us can, right? So you figure out the realms of what you can actually do.
We also speak of transmission, and we speak of our mothers, of where we come from. And I was really struck by the gentleness you treated mothers with in this book. I talk about gentleness because there is a lot of assertion today that we are not our mothers, and I do want to get your thoughts on that.
Whenever I see people say it, I try to understand. I see it with mixed feelings because I know that when I was growing up, there was also a thing of, oh, I don't want to become my mother, da, 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 da. And there was some kind of thing that I did not yet understand, but the thing, but I knew the phrase. As I've grown older, I think in quite a few ways I have become my mother. And sometimes I call her and I say, I was doing that thing. I was just, you would have been proud. So I think there are in many little ways I see my mother in a lot of the things that I do, but I understand that when people say it these days, sometimes they're referring to what they see or what they saw as silence or passivity. With an older generation and contrasting that to the way that they react to certain things today. And I don't actually think it's that easy or straightforward of a dichotomy. I think the ways that the people who have gone before us in different ways have reacted, just in the way as we don't react in one way, there was a plethora of ways that they reacted, to different things. And all of those ways contributed and built the steps for us to be in the place where we can speak louder today. So it's not just the speaking louder that is taking a forceful position or that is standing up for women. There are lots of women who did things silently and had big impact. We need to make the noise for those people. So when
Yeah.
people say we are not our mothers, I want to ask, well, do you actually know their story, or do you know your assumption of who they are because of the representative that they showed to you in their role as mother? Because they had a job to do. So you don't necessarily see who the person fully is. Same thing when people talk about traditional women. I'm like, who is that? Like, you have an image of what you're talking about, but all of these big badass women from before are also traditional women. In so whose definition are you working with?
You know, talking of these traditional women, there was this, poem you wrote, and it's called A Traditional Woman, about this man, telling his girlfriend, his wife, that he wants a traditional woman. I want you to read that poem.
My mother says our relationship feels official. Her mind tells her she's loved me deeply. My eyes remain steady until she takes my hands, claps them together between her palms, and asks for keys to a love that doesn't feel like duty. She's asking to learn. I want to forget the pain enough to say something that absolves us both. I don't know what to say to. I felt naked each time when scanning head to toe, she would explain me to her guests, encourage me to be another girl, the daughter she wanted. Smile more, speak louder, be less blunt, more open, less naive, mingle like the others. How do you expect to make friends, attract men, be liked, be? All those times she looked at me and only saw what wasn't. Her eyes now dare to hold me hostage. Three. I am sorry, my love is not all limbs and giggles, that my smile is a slow bloom. I am sorry that I don't linger in crowded rooms, that my voice doesn't lend itself to high pitches, easy jokes, and the pheromone in lightness. You will find me in the silences between conversations, short phrases dropping timely and heavy, a hail of awkwardness that cracks into unexpected laughter. There are people who pull life from this, for whom I am enough. Four, I love my mother. My mother loves me. We rarely speak the same language.
And I love the end of that, poem. I love my mother. My mother loves me. We rarely speak the same language, And I think this is maturity, and perhaps this is where also, by learning this maturity, we come to, to find our voice, to accept our voice, to accept ourselves with all our flaws. Would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And for me, like looking at accepting our flaws, for me, who is a strong woman is somebody who is able to accept themselves with whatever the flaws is. The moment for me where you step into the position where you're like, I can see myself, not just the shiny bits, but also the bits that aren't too shiny, but aren't going to change anytime soon. And you're like, this is who I am. And there's a strength in that, in being able to hold all your vulnerabilities and all your flaws and accepting, so that you're not constantly trying to be somebody else, but you're instead trying to inhabit your own body in the best way that you can.
There was a part, I don't know which of the poem now you mentioned that, something about your face that no, or the cheekbones that no diet will shed, for instance,
Yeah. Always had
I
big
know.
cheeks, you know? It's like,
Yes, I know.
what's
Like me, I have big thighs. It's like, I don't know. Like, I've
this?
tried the dieting, and sometimes I try, like, why are you starving yourself? I mean, I only dieted like half a day in my life. I think I needed to.
Yeah, it's a little like
I
that.
starved. I ate boiled potatoes. I was like, why am I suffering? I shall ask you to read this wonderful ode to the community of women in Museum of Women.
Praise for the sisters who show up without needing to ask what is wrong, arms full of plantains, portable joy, who swathe your body before it can fall apart. Praise for the women who write books about women who challenge us to live beyond survival, for the girls whose stories incite renaissance. Praise for all the women who chorus groans when the truth is too heavy for words. Artists, quietly molding, mending, retouching me into a masterpiece, even when I don't yet acknowledge I am still under construction. If I ever said I made it this far alone, I lied.
Power of sisterhood. I love the part about women showing up arms full of plantains. This is the only thing I've remembered.
I mean, plantains are my favorite food. So, you know, it is what it is. But there's that thing of women, when you get to a point where you're trying to know your sisters and your sisters are trying to know you, and you're no longer just trying to impose who you think somebody should be on them.
Or impress them also.
Or impress them, that you start to see each other better. And now you show up in different ways. I don't say this is what you should do. I ask you how you would like me to help you to fix something. And I learn to realize that my reactions to things are not other people's reactions to things. So that I might get irritated that somebody's not reacting how I want, but I know to shut up and stay back and let the person process. So there's that safety in sisterhood where you watch somebody else grow, but you grow in the process of learning to be more human. As you hold space for other people and they hold space for you.
In that long list of wonderful things that Tolu does, she is also a podcaster, and her podcast is called Unlearning Strong Women. Did the podcast idea come after the book? How?
It came after, but it was also all together. I like to do projects that don't just come out in one medium that makes sense. The whole idea is having intergenerational conversation with women around the world, everyday women who are doing fantastic things.
Are we leaving anyone behind today in these feminist conversations we are holding? And if we are, how do we ensure we are not leaving anyone behind?
I mean, I think there's always a danger of leaving people behind, particularly, you know, like already most conversations are geared towards people in at a particular stage of life, so that you're not necessarily considering how the woman who does not have the life you have might respond to some of the things that you're responding to. So a good example, for example, is self-care. When we talk about self-care and how we take care of ourselves, a lot of it is commodified in a way that is not accessible to many women. So for me, it's always trying to look at the people who are not within my line of vision for whatever reason, but making the intentional step to look beyond my line of vision to say, the woman who is not shouting. I'm not normally the woman who is shouting, but the woman who doesn't articulate the way I do, perhaps. What is it that she wants? And what does it look like to her? But also the woman who you think might need a hand up, how do you actually deal with what that hand up is, by your definition or by her definition? So it's also about where we meet on this continuums. And if you're trying to help people, that you need to actually learn about their context and what it means to them, as opposed to imposing your own assumptions about their context. And I feel like oftentimes we do the other thing. We're the more educated, the whatever. So we impose on a different context, as opposed to entering the various spaces that we enter to say, what is it that you're doing? What is it that you need? Might you be able to think about this differently? Or maybe it's me who needs to think about it differently, and we both meet in the middle. And none of that gives you a clear, this is where we're leaving people behind, but it's just, I think it's more about their ways on a daily basis that we can leave people out of conversations about equality and equity. And when we harp on one thing too much, to the avoidance or abandonment of all the other things we are bound to. So if we're going to say intersectionality, we should be really intersectional.
I do not know if there are any questions in the chat.
Sorry, I cannot write.
Okay.
My question to Tolu as a writer, how do you bring in women with disability into this thing you're doing? Because we're part of the community. Thank you. My name is Uche from Nigeria.
Thank you, Uche. I think whatever the work that I'm doing, the stories that I'm telling about every woman, or at least I'm trying to make them about every woman, including the women who have disabilities. For me, it's then making sure that I'm having conversations in a position where I'm able to listen to women who have specific disabilities, but also that when I run workshops, when I have outreaches, for want of a better word, that I'm making sure that the spaces are inclusive enough so that people who might not have the access that I have are still able to access those spaces. But that is at the moment the bounds of what I'm able to do to make sure that I have my ear to the ground and to make sure that I reach out, I guess, in moments when I'm able to, so that those stories also apply.
Thank you, Dolu.
I am a first generation immigrant and also a writer and poet. And I feel like in the women that get left behind, there are many immigrant writers and there have been historically. But I feel like when I'm writing, if I don't put my Western voice on, I feel like I'm not heard. And I feel like I'm in a place where I'm not able to have myself heard or portray myself in the way that I would like, in using the language in the way that I would like, because I always have to somehow adjust or appear more Western to be sold. And I'm really like, I just wondered if you have some advice for somebody who is in this liminal position about how to articulate the uniqueness of this position.
I think you're going to need to let go and you're going to need to write it from where you feel. I mean, I was born in Nigeria. I was in Nigeria till I was 13 or 14 before I came to the UK. It is a different experience as to, it just is. So instead of me having an argument with somebody who doesn't want to accept that it is a different experience, I just write from where I'm standing. And sometimes writing from where you're standing and writing in a way that means that you don't fit into neat boxes might mean that things take longer to come. That's just the truth. But in the same way as I was doing some workshops with some Nigerian poets last year about using your other languages. And I was like, when we are speaking, those of us who speak other languages, most of the time you're mixing it in. You're not stopping to say, now I do the French, now I do the Europe. You mix it in. So when you're writing, write in the same way as you would speak, in so that when you bring in the other language, it feels natural. And it's the same thing here. Like what you're adding to the conversation is saying, this is an experience that people should know. And there are going to be lots of people who relate to that. And your audience will find you. I guess it's something someone told me a long time ago, so I'm passing it on to you. Your audience will find you. So just write from where you are without trying to westernize your voice, because it's going to feel fake if it's not real to you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
As museums of women say, you know, I don't yet acknowledge I am still under construction. If I ever said I made it this far alone, I lied. So I didn't make it this far alone, and we are still in the process of learning. And thank you to all of you for joining us for this first conversation that I was really, really privileged to open with you, Tolu. Thank you for giving us your time. Thank you for locating strong women.